I just want to reiterate again that I don't know the way to the BBC. A really quick part of history. When the BBC announced the Code of Archive, and now we're coming off a little over 2 years ago that it made the announcement, there was probably about 20 people in the BBC that knew what the Creative Archive was. Just to put that into context, when I was at the BBC, there was 29,000 employees of the BBC. So it was a surprise. For me, it was a very pleasant surprise because I was one of those 20. So I was delighted at the time when the Director General of the BBC stood up at the Edinburgh Television Festival and announced this project. We couldn't have asked for a better start and a better endorsement. For the rest of the organisation, however, it was news. We hadn't even had a chance to sort of deal with the kind of cultural discussion within the BBC. So I mention this because there's two layers of dialogue that go on here always. One is the dialogue that the BBC has with the outside world, and then there is the ongoing dialogue within the BBC. And I want to be very clear that this is as significant a cultural shift for many people within the BBC as it is for those of us perhaps on the outside looking in going, wow, the BBC is doing this. And this applies to government. I will touch on government in a moment. I just want to make the point, however, that this sort of shift that I'm very glib about, which is, you know, the broadcasters kind of coming down the stairs and joining the network, it feels right, I suspect, for this audience, this is sort of a, this is a very obvious thing for the BBC, particularly as a public service broadcaster, to do. Let me tell you that for, 28,500 people within the BBC who are broadcasters, this is an extremely challenging proposition. They are broadcasters. Their profession is about becoming gatekeepers and creating cultural artifacts that are received, not messed with, not played with, not even really engaged with at a very meaningful level. So I just want to make that very clear. It's easy for me to sort of say this on behalf of the BBC, but this is a conversation that plays out within the BBC and the larger creative industry. It's a very significant conversation going on within the UK just about the creative archive and what it means. With respect to government, certainly in the early days there was very little conversation, and this is really a measure, and again I just want to say I am a spectator here, so my comments are very much as somebody looking at the BBC. The way that the BBC tends to operate, as you know, it is very autonomous from government, except in one regard, which is that every 10 years it has to go back to the government to renew the permission to gather the licence fee. So the BBC is somewhat unique in that it is not funded by tax. It leverages its own license, so it has a direct relationship with its public, and it gathers this license. It, however, has to have permission renewed every 10 years to do this. That permission is up now. So when the Creative Archive was announced, interestingly, it was towards the beginning of the dialogue with government about renewing the BBC's license fee permission. And it has very much been wrapped up in that discussion. And so when I use words like relevance, this is a key part of the language that is part of that dialogue, where the government is saying, we will only give you permission if you can demonstrate that you are going to be relevant to the UK for the next 10 years. And the Creative Archive is one of many activities that the BBC is positioning as demonstrating how it is going to be relevant in the digital age with its audience. And so that's probably all I can be saying in terms of that kind of government dialogue.
Yeah?
Well, my question is about education and the shift from a closed archive to an open archive. Now that we have all these multifaceted versions of history, when I was studying history, it was okay, a multiple choice, stamped on sheet, and you have one history textbook that you read. What is your opinion? How do you think education will go for, especially high school kids? Who chooses the version of history that they're reading,
right.
And how can we possibly be fair and open to these
versions? I suspect there are other people in this audience that on this panel that can address this perhaps even more, particularly the Iraq collection. But from my perspective, I have a somewhat utopian historical perspective, I guess, which is that I'm a big believer in that the more stories that are told, the more diverse are the pickings from which you can draw on, the more likely you are to be able to form your own opinion. And for me, that's the critical part of that equation, is the capacity to be able to form your own opinion. I'm not well-versed in historical theory, so I apologize if the language is inappropriate, but effectively what I'm saying is that I think history is an artifact of opinion. And the capacity for individuals to be able to reach an opinion, I think, is based on their capacity to access exactly the same raw materials as the people who write textbooks. So for me, what's exciting is about trying to encourage and provide access to as many of those stories as possible. Just to illustrate this, for me, one of the really exciting things about the BBC archive is that there is an extraordinary audio archive that is part of the World Service Collection, which represents something like, God, please don't quote me on this, but I think it's around 25 years of commentary on Africa. It's that broad. It's one reporter who has had a show on World Service for 25 years. And every single week has made this program on Africa. His commentary on what's going on in Africa. What's really exciting for me is that when I go to Africa, people ask me about that collection. It's still being broadcast. But people ask me in Africa about that collection because they want to get their hands on it so they can retell the stories. Because they're sick and tired of hearing this guy in the UK tell them over the World Service what is going on in Africa. And for me, that's a really exciting way of illustrating. There's one story here, it's valid. His perspective on this is valid. The difference is that he has had extremely privileged distribution out there, so that his story has dominated. What's exciting for me is releasing it in a way that allows other people to be able to tell their story on an equal plane. And again, we come back to this idea that we bring the broadcaster down so it becomes a node on the network as opposed to the network. Sorry, slightly ranty there, slightly passionate, but hopefully you can get the idea. There's a big question, sorry.